Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you and thank you for visiting with us this evening. Today is Wednesday, June 9th in the year 2010. So we're having a wonderful discussion this evening, and we're going to have a virtual coffee party. So you notice that I don't say coffee, I said coffee. That's because I have a southern prune, as I call myself, not a southern belle, but a southern prune. So I want to welcome you all this evening and ask you to get your favorite chair and your beverage this evening as you relax and we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich culture of Jamaica. You're going to be sipping your delicious cup of Blue Mountain coffee. And this evening, we are going to just talk about how it got there, how we celebrate it, and how it's number one, as usual, along with a lot of things that our tiny island is number one in. So I want to thank the callers on the board and also our callers online, our visitors online, and those who may come by later just to check us out. But we're here each week on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time to do just what I mentioned, to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And here in the backyard, as we gather and sit in our favorite chair, we're celebrating all the positive things that we grew up around and with, and the things we're discovering about even the periods long before our time. And my objective as host of this show is to help to leave a living legacy of how life was in Jamaica during the period before independence. And I know there's a lot of information about the now Jamaica, that because of the internet, you know, everybody that is currently involved in politics or whatever is going on there, everything is current. People can read it on their blogs, on Facebook, on whatever. But our program is just about what was before independence and how it relates to now, and even long before we as seniors, because I'm a senior, grew up in Jamaica. Because since the show has started, I know myself as well as several of my listeners are discovering things we didn't know about before. So I hope you will relax and get your coffee sweetened with whatever is your favorite. For me, it's condensed milk. So I'm just going to be savoring my coffee as we go into the history of our Blue Mountain coffee. And as usual, I must tell the listeners calling in that it's a Labrish. So please feel free to hit one on your telephone. Let me know you're there and you want to join the Labrish. And for those listening online, I'm sorry, but you'll have to call in because I can't do the online thing with you and talk at the same time. So do call in at 1-718-766-4558 and we'll be happy to plug you into the Labrish. So this evening, as the promo said, you know, we have the beverage of distinction for Jamaica, as it is referred to by Dr. Rebecca Tortello. She does some research for a segment that the Jamaica Gleaner has that is called Pieces of the Past. So if any of our listeners that come by later on the board now want to research that, it's a segment that's put together by Dr. Tortello, and it's a lot of different events that happened in the past. So I will be reading from her article on Jamaican coffee, and that's where I found out that it was called a beverage of distinction. So here I go. Legend has it that sometime in or near the year AD 600, a goat shepherd noticed a change in his goat's behavior. After eating the cherry-like fruit of a particular bush, they began to run and jump full of excitement. Curious, this shepherd decided to try out the cherry-like fruit for himself and realized that he also felt full of energy. Intrigued, he took some of the bush's fruit and branches to a nearby monastery where he shared the unusual events with the abbot, who then decided to cook the fruit and branches. After tasting the bitter liquid that resulted, the abbot then decided to throw the entire pot into the fire. Soon, however, when the cherry-like fruit started to burn, a delightful aroma filled the air, and an idea occurred to the abbot. He would investigate making a drink based on the roasted cherry-like fruit, what we now call beans, and the first version of the beverage known today to millions of coffee was born. So that is the birth of the coffee bean. Perhaps it would still be on the tree and just goats would be jumping up and down if this, I see now, the shepherd was from Kaldi, Kaldi. That's the place. I don't even know where that was. And if, as usual, if anyone on the board knows where a goat shepherd from Kaldi, what part of the planet that would be, please put your hands up and let me know. But that's Dr. Tortella's information about how coffee became coffee. So I always wonder how these things got named. Anyhow, who names them? But we know now that it was discovered, it must be a monastery someplace. But we know how it got to be known that the beans is what, you know, the coffee or how it got named. But I'm telling you, goats were jumping up and down. Perhaps they were doing other things too, but it's not mentioned here. Now, it is not known exactly where and when coffee was first cultivated. Some authorities say that around the year 575, Arab traders took the plant to the southern tip of the Arabian Peninsula, now known as Yemen, where this cultivation of coffee began. Others believe that it was grown initially near the Red Sea in Arabia. Others say that coffee was discovered in Ethiopia around 900. Regardless of its exact origin, it is known that coffee cultivation began in earnest in the 15th and 16th centuries when extensive planting of the trees occurred in the Yemen region of Arabia. The world's first coffee shop, Kavahan, is believed to have opened in Constantinople in 1475. The use of coffee beans is said to have spread from Yemen throughout the Arabian Peninsula and later to Turkey. At that time, coffee was used as a ritual drink and for its medicinal properties. It wasn't until the end of the 15th century that roasting and crushing the coffee beans before extracting them with hot water became common practice and the modern coffee drink was born. So we now know how it evolved from the goats to the pot of liquid that tastes horrible to the beans and now to the brewing with water. Okay, the Venetian merchant Pedro della Valle brought coffee to Italy in 1645, and it soon became a favorite drink. The British started to drink coffee in 1650, thanks to another merchant, Daniel Edwards. In 1652, Edwards is also said to have been the first European to open an establishment where coffee was sold as a drink. Wow, this is 1652. A cup of coffee sold for a penny. In Paris, coffee houses opened in 1672, and in 1675, Franz George Kostovic, who had lived in Turkey, opened the first coffee house in Central Europe. Now, it also goes to honor the refining of the drink to someone called Kolschnitzky. Can't pronounce it, but you can figure it out. Some funny name person brought the filtering of the coffee from the grounds and sweetened it and added a dash of milk. So Klonostovic, and it doesn't say where he was from, but you see that it goes way back when I suppose you'd call it people were experimenting with refining what we now enjoy every morning, you know, to wake us up and put us in the right mood. And there are so many jokes and sayings that says, you know, I need a cup of coffee, or I can't talk to you before I have my coffee, or, you know, the coffee is one of the most popular drinks in, I think it is the number one in the entire world. So being from a country where we have the most expensive coffee in the world is quite exciting. Now, let's talk about how coffee comes to Jamaica. Folklore says that in 1723, King Louis of France sent three coffee plants to his colony in Martinique two of the plants died en route, and either the third plant or cutting from it ended up in Jamaica. It was brought there in 1728 by former governor Sir Nicholas Lords. In between 1718 and 1722, Laws, L-A-W-S is spelled, first planted coffee at Temple Hall in St. Andrew, Jamaica. Now, Jamaica's climate was so conducive to coffee production that the coffee industry expanded rapidly from St. Andrew to the Blue Mountain and the hills of Manchester, St. Mary, and St. Elizabeth. By 1814, there were 600 coffee plantations on the island. In the year 1830, with the abolition of slavery, came a shortage of labor and a decline in coffee production. The harvesting of coffee is labor-intensive because the beans are hand-picked when ripe, one at a time. My gosh. By 1850, only 186 coffee plantations were still in operation. Close to 100 years later, in 1943, the coffee industry nearly collapsed due to labor shortages and also mismanagement and lack of organization. Overseas concerns were also being raised as to the quality and consistency of Jamaican coffee, and variable markets were lost. In an attempt to address these issues, the colonial secretary created the Coffee Industry Board in 1953. Production became more streamlined. A centralized marketing system and a rigid system of standards control were developed. There are two main types of Jamaican coffee, Jamaica Blue Mountain and Jamaica Prime. To be known as Jamaica Blue Mountain, coffee must be grown, as its name suggests, in the Blue Mountains within the prescribed area of St. Thomas, St. Andrew, and Portland. Package labels indicate if coffee is a blend or 100% Blue Mountain. Jamaica Prime is grown in Manchester, St. Catherine, Clarendon, St. Anne, and St. Elizabeth. Jamaica Blue Mountain is cultivated between 2,000 and 5,000 feet above sea level, while Jamaican Prime is cultivated at a slightly lower altitude. The Coffee Industries Board trade name for Jamaica Prime is Jamaica Mountain Choice Coffee, and it is recognized as a premium quality gourmet bean in its own right. Now, I'm still reading from this doctor's documentation in Pieces of the Past, which is part of a segment that the Jamaica Dealer Company, Gleaner Company, has on their website. So here I go again. The reaping of the beans is only the first stage of an involved operation. After reaping, coffee is pulped and washed at a pulperie, P-U-L-P-E-R-I-E. I suppose that's how you pronounce it. I don't know what that is, though. And the wet parchment that results is dried, cured, rated, and then sorted. Jamaica is one of the only a few countries worldwide that allows the wet parchment to sit and age for a minimum of 6 weeks so as to ensure consistency. Prior to export, the coffee then undergoes quality control measures, including appearance checks, and cup testing to ensure the cup quality of the beans. Now, Jamaican coffee today. And again, people on the board, if you want to make a comment or join the labyrinth, do put up your hand. And let me just remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each week on a Wednesday to just do something positive about Jamaica, land we love. And tonight we're talking about our coffee beans. So now I'm going to talk about Jamaica's coffee today. And all of this is from the same article. Jamaica's coffee farmers still sell their coffee to the government-run coffee industry board. Many farmers work in cooperatives. 17 currently exist, only one of which is located in the Blue Mountains. There are 12 coffee pulleries. I don't know. That must be, seems to me like a factory or something. Anybody on the board know what that is? Please raise your hand. I should have looked it up, I guess. But it sounds to me like it's the place where the coffee is brought together and do its thing with. And perhaps this only relates to coffee because I don't remember encountering this word before that's spelled P-U-L-P-E-R-I-E-S. Huh. Now, they say there are 12 of those, four of which are in the Blue Mountain Range. There are six authorized coffee roasters in Jamaica who have permission to market Jamaican coffee domestically and internationally. Only six. All commercial shipments are inspected by the Coffee Industry Board, which also issues certificates guaranteeing the authenticity of the coffee. In 1988, Hurricane Gilbert's 150 miles per hour wind damaged 70% of the island's coffee fields and factories, causing production to shut down for close to 2 years. Oh, I wasn't even aware of that. Today, however, production has been restored to former levels. About 75% of the coffee beans produced annually are exported as green beans, that means raw beans. Annual production averages 5,500,000 pounds of green beans. Annual earnings amount to approximately $32 million U.S. for the Jamaican industry. Approximately 85% of the coffee exported goes to, can anyone guess? Anyone on the board want to take a guess? Where 85% of Jamaican coffee goes? Do I see a show of hands? This is elaborate, folks. I guess nobody knows. But I'll tell you, it is not the U.S. It is Japan. The other 15% goes to the United Kingdom, USA, and other countries where it often sells for up to $40 per pound. That is the green beans they're talking about, or the raw beans, before it's roasted and all of that. So I'm sure that when you buy a pack, it's a lot more, but that is the wholesale price. I see a show of hands. So I'm opening up the mic to 718-379. You have Margaret in the backyard. Who do I have there?
This is Lay.
Oh, Lay from the Bronx, home of the Yankees.
You bet.
Okay. Good evening, Mr. Lay from the Bronx, home of the Yankees. And welcome to the Coffee Club.
Yeah.
Favoring your coffee this evening?
I can smell the coffee that you're brewing over there.
You know that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
What do you have to tell me?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I just remembered something that my, when I was back in school in Jamaica, we had general knowledge classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember my math teacher, who was also my swimming coach, but he conducted these classes and he talked about coffee.
Really?
Yeah, and he was an outdoors type of man, so he would he invited us at one time to go to coffee plantations in up in Blue Mountains, but those places are too high for me, so I opted not to go.
Ah.
But he brought to our attention that Blue Mountain coffee is very highly regulated.
Mm-hmm.
And to be called Blue Mountain coffee in the first place, it has to be grown at a certain height. Now, you
mm-hmm.
mentioned it, Rebecca said, but his quote was not 2,000 feet above but 3,000, and it goes up to 5,000.
Right. Well, I think they've lowered it now to I suppose, bring more people into the market.
Well, you know, that is a little bit dangerous because they have categorized a different grade under Blue Mountain coffee, which they call Jamaica High Mountain coffee.
Mm.
And that grows between 1,000 to 3,000 feet.
I see.
So, in other words, you can get coffee that is close enough to Blue Mountain coffee and maybe marketed as such. But it has not only a different name, Blue Mountain coffee, but it may have a name like Jablum or whatever it is.
Oh, yes. It's funny you said that name because I'm going to talk about that particular Jablum in a minute.
Go right ahead, then.
But actually, what she is saying now is that in order to say it's Blue Mountain, now they're allowing it the Jamaica Prime is grown at the 2,000.
Okay, well.
A different designation, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose, the change in standards. Because even below the Jamaica High Mountain coffee is a superior brand blend, which is anything grown below 1,500.
Uh-huh.
So it gets technical, but people should know that there are certain standards that they have to achieve before they can even call it Blue Mountain coffee. And
that's
this is
true.
Why it is so expensive, because
right.
You're buying a genuine thing, you know.
Right, the real thing.
The real thing. And I might mention that also I remember Mr. Chaps was his name, Mr. Chaplin, to a lot of people know his name. He mentioned that one of the largest coffee the best organized growers of coffee was the coffee grown by the Munn family, M-U-N-N.
Right, I'm going to talk about them too.
All right, well, I don't want to steal your thunder, so go right ahead.
Not really, but I was doing this piece from the Pieces of the Past first, and incidentally, I think the Pieces of the Past is a great reference for Jamaicans who like history, and I encourage people to go there. If you just Google Pieces of the Past from the Jamaican Gleaner, you'll get right to it, and they have several of the events that we discuss here are the facts that we share here on Backyard Labrish. And I know that for the now people and the people who really like to Google things and find things out, it's easy to find information with the technology we have now. But I also know that some of the people who come by and listen to the show are not necessarily big researchers, and hopefully they'll find this information interesting and helpful to the people who really just want to know.
True, and this the research done by Rebecca is a little more current than most researchers, because she's quite young, actually.
Right,
so,
right. And she will talk about the past and bring it into the present when some of the information, like from some of the historians that I use, whose information I use, they're still asking for current information. You know, they have a lot of information about a person or event, but they have to piece it together.
Right.
Whereas, you know, she's talking from easier research, you know, because it's a lot more current.
Yeah.
So let me read you the last paragraph of her, and then we're going to do some coffee facts. Now, among Jamaican coffee, although Jamaican coffee maintains its place among the best gourmet coffee in the world, in contrast to the United States, where an average 29 million Americans drink gourmet coffee beverages every day. New York City alone, it's common to see a Starbucks almost every five blocks. In Jamaica, coffee bars are just beginning to gain popularity. Isn't that interesting? You know, a man is never a king in his own country. Here we are. We have the best coffee in the world. But, of course, in the old days, we didn't need coffee shops, right? Because could you buy the Jamaican coffee in the market? I can't remember.
Well, if you recall, I don't know about your household, but in my household, we didn't really drink coffee.
That's true. We drank chocolate.
We drank chocolate, or we drank tea.
And tea.
And coffee... Well, maybe the result of the mountain goats that you mentioned before was aspected the people that wanted it.
Jumping up and down, especially as kids or young people. That's funny.
But we, in fact, as kids, we weren't really allowed to drink coffee.
Right.
That's the long and short of it.
Right. Well, in Kingston now, she's saying in Kingston alone, you can find Susie's Bakery and Cafe at South Dade Plaza Coffee Industry Limited, the coffee mill found in New Kingston, and also at the Manly International Airport and Devon House, also boasts coffee bars. But that, it was very interesting, I found, you know. So let me give you some coffee facts. Do you know that Bach wrote a coffee cantata in 1732?
No.
Oh, yes, he sure did. Now, the heavy tea tax imposed on the colonies in 1773, which caused the Boston Tea Party, resulted in America switching from tea to coffee. Drinking coffee was an expression of freedom. Plus, I suppose it made them jump up and down like the goats. So the English weren't very pleased with that. Now, the founding fathers of the U.S. during the Revolution formed their national strategies in coffee houses. Interesting. In Italy, espresso is considered so essential to daily life that the price is regulated by the government. Italy now has over 200,000 coffee bars, and latte is the Italian word for milk. So if you request a latte in Italy, you'll be served a glass of milk, not coffee. Raw coffee beans soaked in water and spice are chewed like candy in many parts of Africa. Japan ranks number 3 in the world for coffee consumption. Over 10,000 coffee cafes plus several thousand vending machines with both hot and cold coffee serve the needs of Tokyo alone, just Tokyo. Coffee is the most popular beverage worldwide with over 400 billion cups consumed each year. Coffee is a word commonly used, coffee as a world commodity is second only to oil. It's oil first, then coffee second on the commodities market. In 1727, as a result of seeding smuggled from Paris, they were smuggling even then, 1727, coffee plants first were cultivated in Brazil. Brazil is presently by far the world's largest producer of coffee, accounting for almost one-third of the world's coffee production, producing over 3 to 3 1/3 billion pounds of coffee each year. French writers and philosopher Voltaire, V-O-L-T-A-I-R-E, who lived between 1694 and 1778, is said to have drank 50 cups of coffee per day. Isn't that something? And that was all on part of the research for Pieces of the Past. Quite interesting. And I want to thank all the listeners on the board. I see we have a listener. We have a couple of listeners from 7973 and 678. Oh, that sounds local. And, of course, we have 631. And I can see there are a couple of people listening online also. So again, you're listening to Backyard Labrish, and we're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. And tonight, we're celebrating our beverage of distinction. And I see a raised hand from 631, and I'm 451, and I'm going to open up the mic. Good evening. This is Margaret in the backyard. We're Labrishing. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, Margaret. Good evening. This is Janine from Long Island.
Hi, Janine from Long Island. How are you today?
Fine, thanks. And you?
What do you have in your coffee?
Well, I wish it was Blue Mountain, but now it's Taster's Choice.
I got you.
But I was wondering, because you said latte, that was milk. I thought that latte was coffee with milk.
Right, but not in Italy.
Just the
only in
milk?
Italy, it's different.
Only milk, they call latte.
Yeah, if you say that, it says in Italy, expresses, yeah, that's what, if you ask for that, that's what you'll get.
Just the milk itself.
Right.
That's strange, because I thought the name, you know, it was.
Right, I did too.
The milk, but some form of coffee is in there. I thought that's what it was, you know.
Right, but I remember, you know, I don't know, remember when I started drinking coffee, but it certainly was in Jamaica. And I remember that at one point, you know, we would it would be like half cow's milk with the cream, that thick cream on it.
Yes.
And the coffee would be so strong, you know, that you could use half and half. And it was just delicious. Because I remember going to the country where they would brew the coffee, where, you know, I don't remember how they did it, but they would, like, have to strain it off from the grounds.
Certain coffee pot that they used.
Right. And man, I love my coffee. Absolutely love my coffee.
But I remember as a child just smelling the coffee. It smells so good.
Right.
And I used to ask either my father or my grandmother to leave a little bit in the cup for me, because as Lay justly said, we weren't allowed to have coffee. We had to have Friar's Coca. You remember that?
Right. No, well, I remember most in my house it was the chocolate, you know, the chocolate that came from the country and you grate it. And it.
Country chocolate.
Right. And they had to boil it. It went through a process.
For us, that was like on a Sunday. But
I got a special.
It was like the brand was Friars chocolate. I think
Leno. Barwayas fries.
Fries, chocolate,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I used to beg for a taste of that coffee because it used to smell.
It gets to you when you smell it, yeah.
Yes, yes. But, you know, to get a full cup, that was not allowed, but they would give us a little taste.
But the way you were describing it before, Madge, that, you know, you were having half and half, that is exactly how the Spanish habit, you know, café con leche, they call it.
Yeah.
Ah.
That's, I have coffee when I'm about. I ask for it that way.
Yeah,
right.
What they do is they boil the milk, and then when the milk come to a boil, they put the coffee in there, and then sweeten it with whatever.
Right, right. Well, I remember personally just loving that cream. This is the old days when you used to scald the milk, as they call it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it formed cream as it cooled down.
Yes.
That almost looked like butter.
Yes.
Anyway,
like
I'm going to read you another article I found on a bit of history about Jamaican coffee. And I forgot who wrote this one, but it says, in 1728, Sir Nicholas Laws, the then governor of Jamaica, imported coffee into Jamaica from Martinique. The country was ideal for this cultivation, and 9 years after its introduction, 83,000 pounds of coffee was exported. Between 1728 and 1768, the coffee industry developed largely in the foothills of St. Andrew, but gradually the cultivation extended into the Blue Mountains. Since then, the industry has experienced many rises and falls, some farmers abandoning coffee for livestock and other crops. In order to save the industry, in 1891, legislation was passed to provide instructions in the art of cultivating and curing coffee by sending to certain districts competent instructors. Efforts were then made to increase the production of coffee and to establish a central coffee work for processing and grading. This effort to improve quality, however, was not very successful until 1943. It was unacceptable to the Canadian market, which at the time was the largest buyer of Jamaican coffee. So we learn one thing from this article, that in 43, Canada was the big buyer, but now it's Japan. Interesting. In 1944, the government established a central coffee clearinghouse where all coffee for export had to be delivered to the clearinghouse where it was cleaned and graded. Improvement in the quality of Jamaican's coffee export was underway. In June of 1950, the Coffee Industry Board was established to officially raise and maintain the quality of coffee exported. The premium quality Jamaican washed coffees have been achieved through the efforts of the Coffee Industry Board. The first central factory to produce washed coffee for export was established by the board in Aenon Town in 1950. Where the heck is that? Anybody know? Aenon, Aenon Town. What part of Jamaica is that? Anybody on the board knows?
No, I don't. Aenon?
Yeah, I never heard of that place. Aenon Town. But there are lots of names of places that I never heard of anyhow. But if anybody knows what parish that is, this writer didn't say. They just assumed that we know what parish it is. Hey, you Jamaicans out there and Jamaicans, do you know where Aenon Town is? Aenon Town.
Is it possible that they changed the name as they went along?
I don't think so. We're talking about something that happened in 1950.
Yeah, yeah.
That's sort of current.
Yes, yes.
Okay, in 1953, the board took over the marketing aspect of local coffee production and sought to establish markets in England and later Japan. as the traditional markets in Canada and the United States were switching to instant coffee produced from low-grade coffee, which Jamaica does not produce. Their efforts have paid rich dividends. In an article, High Price But Low Productions, which appeared in the Coffee International, the business journal of the international coffee industry, the following was stated. The Jamaican coffee growers get a higher price for his coffee. No, the Jamaica coffee grower gets a higher price for his coffee than any other coffee-producing country. Approximately 73% of the price paid by the buyers on the world market. This is due to the extremely high degree in efficiency in processing by the Coffee Industry Board. The price they get is high and the demand is far greater than available supplies because they, the Coffee Industry Board, have succeeded in establishing a reputation for consistent high quality. And I'm really impressed with that because as I always like to do, you know, to bring things that we read about, especially the things we're proud about and things that work, right. Positive things that work. The point I get here is that one of the reasons Jamaica can still demand a high price for their coffee is because it is consistent in the quality.
The quality, yes.
And if a lot of other industries within Jamaica, as well as the rest of the world, can take a cue from that. You know, a lot of times people or countries or cultures lose their credibility or their, you know, their options sometimes because they lower their standards.
Yeah.
And they, instead of raising the standards or being consistent, if you have attained a high standard, they try to water things down and change.
Yep.
So here we can say that the establishment of these regulations, it's not all the time that I suppose all regulations work, but in this case, apparently, it did work and it is working.
Yeah.
Because it has maintained. And another thing I wanted to point out from what I read, and if anybody, you know, see it differently, please feel free to put your hands up. I see there are several callers on the board. But I gathered as I read that at one time there was a question as to the consistency, and Canada actually refused a shipment because they thought that there was something wrong with the quality. So somebody stepped in, and I suppose the government at that time, and said, you know, let's have a standardized system where we make sure that certain things are put in place and we educate the farmers. That's what they did. They sent experts in because people can't do something if they don't know, if they're not taught.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
And I can definitely see how whatever they used, whatever system they used to attain the quality that was acceptable and caused them to maintain these standards, they need to look at it and apply it to other things. Because, you know, it takes a system, and it takes once you have attained a standard, you need to be consistent with that standard, and then you can continue to demand as much as the market will pay.
And as a result, Jamaican Blue Mountain Coffee is certified. You know, it has a certification stamp, 100% certified on each package or carton or however you're buying it.
Oh,
it says the stamp is on there, and it's 100% certified.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So it shows that, you know, in anything that I think that applies to even your personal life. You know, if you have a system, if you develop a system, and you have a standard, an acceptable standard for that system, and you keep whatever you do at that system, whether it's in your daily work, in your study, in your discipline, then you can, if nothing else, feel good about yourself, because you know you are maintaining your standards. So we don't have to compromise. And I'm always happy to celebrate the things that we do well on a consistent basis, you know, and Jamaica have so much of that to celebrate. So I always try to ask my listeners, I believe personally that the more energy you give anything, whether it's positive or negative, is the more it's going to grow, because everything needs energy to grow. And what we're trying to do here in the backyard is to give some energy to things that are positive, so that we can talk about it, think about it, blog about it, circulate, tell our friends about it. And with that said, I hope that the listeners who are on the board now, on listening online or come by later, will find some value in what we do here in the backyard and refer us to their friends that might like to learn and enjoy and positive things about Jamaica, land we love, right?
Right.
Regardless of what's happening, we love our country.
Amen to that.
So now I want to tell you a little bit. My loyal listener from the Bronx was going to be telling you about the months. But I want did I do all the different years that things happened already? Yes, I think I did. In 1953, the board took over the marketing. Yes.
Yes.
All right. So now I had a little timeline here that I wanted to share with you. But bear with me here, because I usually have my papers scattered all over. I'm not a professional radio personnel or commentator, so I'm just doing my thing, hoping that, and with the help of all the help I get from my loyal listeners who participate and join the Labrish, I am very grateful to you and hope that more people will put up their hands so we can plug them in. So here is what Wikipedia has on Jamaica and coffee. Jamaica Blue Mountain Coffee, or Jamaican Blue Mountain Coffee, or Jamaican Blue Mountain Coffee, is the same thing, is a classification of coffee grown in the Blue Mountains of Jamaica. The best lots of Blue Mountain coffee are noted for their mild flavor and lack of bitterness. Over the last several decades, this coffee has developed a reputation that has made it one of the most expensive and sought-after coffee in the world. Over 80% of all Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee is exported to Japan. Well, we know that already.
They have the instant too, you know?
Right.
Not just the perk. They have the instant coffee too. The Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee comes in the instant too.
Right. In addition to its use for brewed coffee, the beans are the flavor base of, anybody can guess? Tia Maria coffee liqueur.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, okay. Jamaica Blue Mountain Coffee is a global protected certification mark, meaning that only coffee certified by the Coffee Industry Board of Jamaica can be labeled as such. It comes from a recognized growing region in the Blue Mountain region of Jamaica, and its cultivation is monitored by the Coffee Industry Board of Jamaica. I wonder who they are. The Blue Mountains are generally located near Kingston to the south and Port Antonio to the north. And it tells it's 2,300 meters, which is 7,500 feet. They are some of the highest mountains in the Caribbean. The climate of the region is cool and misty with high rainfall. The soil is rich with excellent drainage. This combination of climate and soil is considered ideal for coffee. The Coffee Industry Regulation Act specifies what coffee may use the label Blue Mountain. Additionally, it restricts the use of the Blue Mountain trademark to those authorized by the coffee industry alone. Broadly speaking, coffee harvested from the parishes of St. Andrew, St. Thomas, Portland, and St. Mary may be considered Blue Mountain coffee. The specification boundaries, and it tells you all the boundaries that they are bound by. And some of these places I never heard of. It doesn't say what parish, but Front Hill, Ramble, Good Hope, Dallas, Maryland, Golden Spring, Blandon Hill, Tranquility, and Skibo, S-K-I-B-O. Anybody ever heard of those places?
And that's in Jamaica?
Yeah. We're talking about in Jamaica. Traditionally, only coffee grown at elevations, here you go, Lay, Wikipedia have it right, between 3,000 and 5,500 feet can be called Jamaican blue coffee.
Right, my instructor was right then.
Yep, and but here's it though, and elevations between 1,500 and 3,000 is called Jamaican high mountain coffee.
Right, and Janine, you mentioned instant coffee. You have to be careful when you buy instant coffee because it might not say blue. It probably said mountain coffee.
Coffee, yes.
Yeah, so you have to be careful with that.
Yes, that's a big difference right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the coffee industry regulates and allows five classifications. And, you know, remember I mentioned earlier in some of the documentation that the beans are shipped unroasted to some of these countries. They don't roast it before it gets to where it's going, in some cases. Now, Blue Mountain number one has 90% of the beans must be a certain size. It's no more than 2% of the beans may have any significant defects. So they have a numbering system for all the beans, you know. So they have people inspecting the beans, and it goes into certain categories. But I just thought that was very interesting because apparently, if, you know, just like we're all humans, if you don't have standards that you have to be, that you're judged by in the case of a product, you know, anybody would be doing their own thing.
Right.
And reaping it at different times,
right.
And perhaps, you know, it wouldn't work. But whatever system they have in place now is apparently working very well, and the country continues to maintain or to get its price.
Yeah.
It's going price for coffee. And Lay, were you aware that coffee was the second traded highest trading commodity? I think at times now that the economy is sort of what it is, sometimes gold, because I check the commodities trading sometime, and in the wintertime, of course, is always oil first.
Yeah, well, coffee has always been up there, but I wasn't aware that it was number two.
Mm-hmm. Every now and then gold takes over, I think. But I think goal is not as high as it used to be a few months ago. But
still quite a high. That's the place to go if you got money.
Where?
Into gold.
Oh, I got you. Yeah. Yeah, because I don't think it would suit you to go into coffee right now. That's a joke. But let me see if I, yeah. You know, tell me what you know about the Mun family, Lay, and let me see if it corresponds with what I read here.
Well, the Mun family that was one of the first families. Can you hear me?
I can.
That was one of the first families that were organized and had their own central coffee factory.
Right.
And it was the factory was situated up in Mavis Bank.
Right.
Right in the heart of the Blue Mountain area.
Right.
Now, this goes way back, you know, this family.
Oh, yes. Who do you know? Do you know Edgar? Edgar Mun?
He must be the nephew that's currently...
Right. Now, the first...
I just wanted to mention that the Keeble Mun, who was one of the first members of the family, was also a minister of agriculture.
Right. And he was the first coffee taster, too, when this board started.
It helps to be in a position like that to forward your own. I mean, to us, that would be like a conflict of interest. But
it even went back before him. You know, the coffee was in the Mun family before Keeble.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
But they're so well organized that they shipped the beans to the United States and actually got authorization to produce Blue Mountain coffee here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, and it talks about here now that I think who you're talking is Edgar Mun. And the Mun family first started with coffee plantation when Cecil Augustus Mun, the son of a Major Mun of Major Mun from Kent, England, came to settle in Jamaica in 1885. He bought the Strawberry Hill Plantation high in the Blue Mountains. The business was taken over by his son, Cecil Victor Mun. What he discovered was that it was very difficult to get the coffee dried at that altitude. So in about 1921, Victor founded Mavis Bank, about 5 acres of riverside in those days. The whole concept was that since it faced east to west, the sun hits it from in the morning until late in the afternoon. This was to be a drying depot where the coffee would come down from Strawberry Hill to be dried. In addition, the fresh spring water on the property was perfect for pulping the cherry berry and processing the coffee. So the Mun family originally came from Kent, England in 1885. And they were in the coffee business from that time. So Keeble wasn't the first one in it, is what I mean. And he just happened to be in the position that he was, but he was in the coffee business before. Now, after his death, Edgar Mun's wife continued the operations for some 10 years before passing it on to her son, Keeble. In 2001, Keeble received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Coffee Specialty Association of America. After his death, Edgar Munn, from the beginning, there had been a mysterious attraction to Blue Mountain Coffee, but as a result of several factors, over-cultivation, a main cause, the coffee had suffered a tremendous lowering of quality and quantity, so that by the 1940s, there were only a small amount of Blue Mountain producers, each independent and each dwindling. In 1951, a hurricane all but destroyed the Blue Mountain coffee industry. Only three perpetrators were operating: Mavis Bank Coffee Factory, Moppy Hall, M-O-P-Y Hall, and Silver Hill. A year earlier, Keeble Munn had helped develop the Coffee Industry Board, which drew up guidelines for regulation and grading of the Blue Mountain coffee. Over the next 20 years, the quality and quantity of the Blue Mountain coffee regained its former mystique. In 1973, the Jamaican government decreed that only coffee produced by Mavis Bank, Moy Hall, and Silver Hill, and the government station at Wallenfort Estate, distributed by Roma, could be legally termed Blue Mountain coffee. Interesting. The board also instituted a seal of quality that certifies these coffees as 100% Blue Mountain. Any coffee not displaying that seal is at best a blend. Today, Cable's nephew, Edgar Munn, continues the family tradition of growing and producing Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee from his farms in Jamaica. In addition, he is the U.S. representative for Blue Mountain coffee roasted and packaged under the Jamblum label. He's also the largest importer of JMB green bean coffee to the U.S. market, but he is not limited to just Blue Mountain coffee. So that's the spiel on him. Edgar is now expanding to offer Munn's World Coffee after having traveled to different farms and realizing that there are many coffee connoisseurs who enjoy the variety of rich tastes offered from around the world. So he's now expanding, I suppose, beyond Jamaican coffee and offering other coffees. But the Munn family goes back to 1885. Interesting. Did you know that, Leigh?
Yeah, yes.
Oh, okay. So he's from it goes down into generations. And, you know, it's always good to see that families are still involved in whatever their forefathers developed.
Well, let's put it this way. It's very successful, and it's making a lot of money.
Yeah. I am sure.
You mentioned before, what is that word, pulp?
P-E-R-I-E-S. I gather, are you able to Google it and see what it means? It seems to me like a place that specifically houses the coffee or, you know.
I thought I had the explanation for that. You know, the process of collecting the fresh coffee beans goes into a process called pulping.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it's just the plural of that is the place.
Yes. So it's a, I guess
pulp
it's
berries.
Different. Yes, that's what it is.
Oh,
so
I guess.
once goes there, it arrives at the factory and it is placed in a large holding tank and,
mm-hmm.
and inspected, you know, because the beans have to be just right.
Mm-hmm.
And fermentation process goes on, and they have to see if any of the cherries are those red
beans
are infested with infested. It's a very labor intensive process. So the money that they get for the final process, believe me, it's well worth it.
Right, just because of as it mentioned several times, of how labor-intensive it really is to do it right.
Yeah.
Because also in one of the articles, it mentioned that Jamaica is one of very few countries that process the drying of the beans the way it does. And I think there's a water process involved.
Yes.
And it could be that coffees from other parts of the world are not dried in the same way.
Well, I remember one time, a long time ago, when we were talking about Manchester, I mentioned that the property that I went visited had this large concrete slab.
Yeah, I remember. I think they used to call them barbecues.
Exactly right.
Yeah, I remember passing that when I used to travel to Save Lamar.
All right, so the wet parchment is placed on there, on those slabs.
Right, and I always remember like it was slanted. It wasn't like flat.
It might have
looked that way because I was just passing it. But I was always intrigued with these. They were huge, like slabs of concrete.
They have to move the beans around.
Oh, you know, I see. And they perhaps have it slanted so the drier ones go to the bottom or something.
Right, and it takes about 5 days, the process.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And the interesting part, I thought, is when it mentioned that the beans are picked one bean at a time.
Well,
and you know, there are, I suppose, millions of these beans that have to make up all these poundage, you know, the weight. So it's really labor-intensive because those little babies are small.
Yeah.
Almost like a marble or, you know, a small marble.
Mm.
So anyway, again, I want to remind our listeners that we're here each week talking about land we love, all the positive things that we are now doing or did before, or we, the seniors, can remember that we did when times were different in Jamaica and we were growing up and we didn't have all the challenges that seem to be facing the young people all over the world, but especially in Jamaica right now. So what we do here is always celebrate and reminisce, because I don't know for the rest of the listeners who may come by, but I think for some of my loyal fans, we are sort of seniors, right?
Right.
Okay, so all the seniors say amen.
Amen.
But looking back, we didn't know how good we had it, did we?
No.
We never really appreciated it, what it was.
In some way we did, but we took it for granted.
Took it for granted, definitely, because now when I look back, I realize that indeed, we weren't rich or anything like that, but the times we had and the things we were exposed to and the things we were able to do was really, really precious.
Yeah.
And, you know, really grounded us and made us who we are today. And people from any culture, I encourage them, you know, to think about and celebrate and pass on the things that were meaningful to them, even though the world is changing and things are different anywhere you're from. But still, you know, there are certain basic principles that we know were instilled in us when we were growing up. And in some way, we can try to encourage the younger generation, the next generation, the now generation,
right,
to celebrate those things. And regardless of what's happening in your environment, there's always something that you can reach down and find. And no matter what you're going through in your circumstances, there's always something or someone that you can find some strength in. So we choose to find strength and encouragement in the way we were raised. And I know for me, and I'm sure that several of my listeners might share the same feeling, that I feel privileged that I was born on the island of Jamaica during the time I was born there.
Yes.
So with that said, I am going to be saying goodnight in a couple of minutes, unless some of our listeners on the board have any comments. Beg your pardon?
I was just about to say that in Jamaica, the old people had a saying that money don't buy happiness.
Happiness, yeah.
And we were a happy people.
Yes.
Right. Definitely.
Or you didn't have to be rich or have a lot of money. I mean, we had just what it took to keep the children and the people happy,
yes,
our families happy, and we were happy about that.
Yes.
I remember one thing I always seemed to stick in my mind, you know, and I left there. I know, Leigh, you perhaps left before me. I left Jamaica in 1959, and during the time I used to travel from Kingston to Westmoreland and sometimes St. Thomas, very rarely, but anywhere else, but a couple of those places on a regular basis, I you know how you would have these, like a shop in the district or a place in the district where the young children would gather.
Yeah.
And I remember as I was passing by, whether it was by car or the Royal Mail or whatever I used to take in those days, there was always music playing. And even if, as you saw the little boys and girls, mostly boys at the time, they were dancing. They were always dancing. They could have no shoes, holes in their pants, you know, but they were hanging out and the music was playing and it seems like everybody was happy.
Yes.
You know, it was not so much anger as there seemed to be in the young folks today.
No, I don't think we had that.
And I know we didn't have that because, you know, we didn't know it then, but we were really privileged.
Yes. Yeah.
There were a lot of people who were, you know, not as perhaps financially able. But I get the feeling that even those, they might not be, you know, in the same financial category as everybody else. But wherever they were, they seemed happy. I remember the country parts, people were all smiling and waving to you. You know what I mean?
They were satisfied with what they had.
Right. But there was just a general different feeling. But, you know, I am sure that there are our parents and grandparents that are still trying to reassure the now generation and the generation who are going to be the leaders of the country in the future, to as I mentioned, you know, to get to a standard, and retain the standard, you know, don't go backwards. If anything, try to go forward, and put. Hang your hat a little higher and reach for perfecting whatever your art is, whether it's in farming or, you know, whatever you do, just do it to the best of your ability. So with that said, I'd like to invite our callers to come back next week when we will have something else to discuss, where we are going to be celebrating enlightening. I hope you got some enlightenment today, and or find some points of interest in our coffee stories. And come back and visit us next week, where we'll be here like clockwork. So, Janine,
yes.
I want to thank you for being here.
You're
and
welcome.
Hope you enjoyed the show.
I sure did. I'm just sorry that I don't really have some Blue Mountain right now.
I know. Well, you know, in this age of technology, they're having virtual tea parties. So today we're having a virtual coffee party.
Yes.
So you can just pretend you're having the Blue Mountain with whatever you always take it. Like we pretend we're on in our hammock or on our veranda or wherever we are in the backyard with the trade winds blowing gently across your cheeks.
Well, I don't know about you all, but I'm having a coffee clutch.
All right.
Well, I'm just going to mix my taster's choice and I'll say to it, tonight you're my Blue Mountain.
Thank you. That's
give
it.
Give me the flavor.
Go, girl.
Give me the flavor.
Good night, all.
All right, good night, and enjoy your coffee.
Enjoy your coffee cake. What are you having?
I'm having rum cake, baby.
Oh.
I'm drinking my coffee.
Well, I would like to tell you I have one of those Tia Maria.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm not allowed alcoholic things, so I'll just pretend.
Yes, yeah, but it's really a nice drink.
It is.
Yes, yes.
Well, I thank my listeners for being here, and do join us next week. And as I always say, make it a great week. Good night.
Good night. God bless.
Thank you.
Bye.